The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine. It's Tuesday, the 18th of July, 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And we've a busy one lined up for you, as always. And we want you getting involved. Get your phone out, give us a text, give us a call, have your say or raise your issues. If there's something you feel we can spotlight for you, it could be something positive in your life, something that you need some assistance with, whatever it is, get in touch with us. We are waiting now to read your texts and take your calls. You can WhatsApp us or text us. It's the same number. It's 086 60 25000. If you're listening outside the Republic, 00353 866 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25000, or simply comment on our social media if you're watching the show. I'll remind you about that a little later on in the program. Okay, let's see what is making the front of and inside some of the newspapers this morning. The Donegal Democrat today: a man charged with the murder of a man whose body was found in the water off Slieve League has been remanded in custody following a brief appearance at court. Alan Vile was before Monday's sitting of Letterkenny District Court via video link from Castlereagh Prison. The 38-year-old has been charged with the murder of Robert Wilkin, whose body was found floating in waters off Slieve League on July 3rd. Vile first appeared before a special sitting of Ballyshannon District Court on Friday. Monday's sitting of Letterkenny District Court heard that a book of evidence is not yet ready in the case. Vile was remanded in custody until August 10th. When he will again appear via video link for the service of a book of evidence, if it is ready by that date. On to the Nationals now, and I'm not going to lie, when we were covering the RTE payments controversy, scandal, whichever way you want to call it, lots of people were texting in saying, well, that's that, I've cancelled my direct debit for the TV licence, or I'm not paying my TV licence. And I thought, well, we say that, don't we? Well, we've backed it up this time as a nation. There are early indications that people are withholding their TV licence fee as RTE grapples with a rolling scandal. This, as I mentioned, is the Irish Independent. New figures show a drop of more than 30% in renewals in the first week of July when compared with the same period last year. The development has so far cost RTE close to £1 million. The numbers paying in June also dropped by a smaller amount, leading one member of the Oireachtas Media Committee to suggest there was a rapid fall after news about secret payments to Ryan Tuberty emerged. Fine Gael TD Brendan Griffin said, even with a rising population, the figures have clearly fallen for June and dramatically for the first week of July. Figures released by the Department of Media reveal a fall of almost 6,000 in the number of people paying the €160 licence fee when compared to the same period last year. So as I say, I doubted, if people would back up the words, just to be completely honest, but 30% of you out there on average have not renewed for that month. On to the Irish Times now, and we're going to talk about this shortly on the programme. In fact, it's going to be our first item, I think. But counties Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan would be reconnected to the National Rail Network for the first time in decades under proposals set out in the new All-Ireland Rail Review to be published later this month. Minister for Transport Eamon Ryan said yesterday that one of the key elements of the new plan will be re-establishing rail links from Claremorris in Mayo to Athenryan Galway and from Waterford to Rosslare. He said this would mean there would be a rail line running down the spine of the country from Ballina to Wexford. Mr. Ryan spoke about the plan yesterday in New York after key elements of its contents had been revealed earlier by the Times. The move would be primarily aimed at facilitating the transport of freight from industrial plants based along the route, but it would also allow for the future development of passenger services. Mr. Ryan told the Times during a visit to New York that the plan, which includes short-term, medium and long-term projects, would also contain proposals for a new line to serve Donegal for the first time since the 1960s. He said it would propose a route running from the existing Dublin-Belfast line at Portadown through Dungannon, Omagh, Strabane, Letterkenny and on to Derry. Ryan's plan deals with proposed rail investment over a 30-year period, short-term projects developed in this decade, medium in the 2030s and so on. I have yet to get eyes on this report. I don't like the way it's worded here because it sounds like we could be at the end, we could be in the long-term plans. But it would be very interesting, and this is the first sort of really high-level government commentary stroke commitment on a possible rail link. I just don't like the phraseology here, and maybe when we get a look at that report, I just hope that the Donegal plan is not token mentioned, because if it's 30 years into the future, it really would feel like that. So it's getting wetter. The country is getting wetter officially. We are seeing a bit more sun light, and temperatures are increasing. And particularly here in the northwest, it's getting wetter. Not weather, climate. It's getting wetter as it relates to climate. But reading in the Mail here, Ireland has become wetter, warmer, but also brighter over the last 30 years, a new report from Metairn has found. Now, there's a bit of a in the reporting of this. Firstly, this is information that some people feel is very serious. Others dismiss it. But it's not featured very heavily in any of the papers. It's really quite buried in some of them, not buried as if they're hiding it, just buried in that they don't see it to be really quite important. And that film that was out, Don't Look Up, was it? That was out a couple of years ago, talked about how weather is covered. And like the papers are sort of saying, like the good news is though there's more sunlight. But the reason there's more sunlight, if you look at the figures overall, is because of climate change. But anyway, that's fine. I'm not going to, you know, we'll just cover it as we go. I'm not trying to convince anyone of anything, or it's not a hobby horse of mine. But as I say, you know, the positive here is not in terms of news coverage that it's getting brighter, because that's all part of the problem, if you know what I mean. But anyway, the National Forecaster today published a comprehensive summary of Ireland's latest climate averages for the period 1991 to 2020. So this is a trend, okay? So this isn't looking out the window and seeing what's happening today. The key findings from Metairn's analysis highlight changes in Ireland's climate over the past three decades. The forecaster said the most notable change has been a 0.7% increase in the average yearly temperature for Ireland, which now stands at 9.8 degrees. Now, it varies from region to region. Average temperatures are higher across the country for all seasons in the most recent 30-year period, the study found. It also discovered sunshine hours have increased by around 5% compared to the 1961 to 1990 period. So the average rainfall's increased significantly too, but more so for us here in the northwest. So when we talk about averages, an average of more sunlight, that doesn't mean it necessarily applies to us, because we certainly have seen a bigger increase in rainfall. So if you've been around for 30 years, it is raining 7% more on average now than it did 30 years ago, which is really quite significant, isn't it? Any views on that? 086 60 25,000. The papers are still full of the RTE stuff. I'm purposely picking around it a little bit. But The Sun has done a poll of people, and I would say it's about whether Ryan Tubridge should go back to the radio or not. And at this stage, like, it was an interesting story. It's a scandal. We hope all that stuff gets sorted, right? But does it really matter if one person is on the radio or not? If someone asked me that, I'd be like, well, yeah, what? No, I don't care. You know, it's not really a big deal. But anyway, be that as it may. Nearly half of Irish Sun readers don't believe Ryan Tubridge should ever return to RTE. An explosive poll, hopefully doesn't explode in my hands. An explosive poll today reveals viewers and listeners have been left stunned in recent weeks by the revelations of secret payments made to the Radio 1 star, though he argues they weren't secret. It was RTE that kept them secret. Embattled Tubbs, 50, is desperate to return to the flagship morning show, describing it as all he has and vowing to fight tooth and nail for his professional future. But a new survey of more than 4,300 Irish Sun readers show that almost half, 49%, think it's too late for Tubridy to ever find a way back to his former gig. A majority of TV and radio fans, over 2,160, answered definitely no, there's no going back. And then a certain amount says yes, I think about 40. And then 10% says, I don't really know, don't care, probably. But anyway, there you go, that's that. The Irish Daily Mirror tells us that vaping raises the risk of heart and lung disease, according to scientists. Professor Jason Rose of Maryland University said e-cigarettes deliver numerous substances into the body that are potentially harmful, including chemicals and other compounds not known to or understood by the user. Nicotine-contained e-cigarettes are associated with increases in blood pressure and heart rate. Research also indicates flavoured agents carry risks associated with heart and lung diseases in animals. The American Heart Association says the true cost to health may not be known for decades. The findings are in the journal Circulation. And lastly, we'll go to the Irish Daily Star today. Almost three quarters of all used syringes tested in Dublin last year as part of an EU-wide drug analysis programme contained cocaine. It was the second highest proportion of traces of coke found in syringes in 14 cities after Athens. We have a particular problem with drugs in this country, you know. Report after report suggests that our usage and evidence of usage is well above elsewhere. The findings highlight the growing prevalence of cocaine use in the capital as well as a trend of polydrug use. The results of tests conducted last year show cocaine was detected in 71.7% of used syringes analysed from Dublin. They also reveal that heroin remained the most common drug found in samples at 73.7%, the fourth highest share among the various locations. So why is it a particular problem in this country, I wonder? Okay, a quick run through some of the papers this morning. It is the 9 till noon show. Our first guest joins us in just a couple of minutes. Right, so counties Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan would be reconnected to the National Rail Network for the first time in decades under proposals set out in the new All-Ireland Rail Review to be published later this month. A huge advocate for a better rail infrastructure on the island of Ireland, but into the northwest, is, of course, Richard Logue, who you've heard on the show regularly. He joins us now. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm fine. This is unusually positive language in this regard, isn't it, that we're hearing really high up in government the words rail and Donegal being mentioned in the same sentence?
And who would have thought, if you'd asked that 20 years ago, I mean, it's become a bit of a national in-joke, isn't it, about no trains to Donegal. But, I mean, there has been, as you know, there's been a lot of work going on in the background, certainly lobbying politicians and getting the case built up to argue the point that Donegal, and you know, needs this development. Because if we're going to really start to offer a genuine counterpoint to Dublin, and the east of Ireland, then places like Donegal are crying out for infrastructural investment. So in many respects, and especially in the context of Donegal, of Letterkenny, Strabane and Derry being considered part of the Northwest City region, it makes absolute sense to connect it all up and make it so much easier to get here.
Have you seen anything of this report? Because I'm starting and I'm feeling really positive and then I'm reading down and I'm then seeing, you know, short-term, medium-term, long-term proposals, and you know, I'm starting to feel, is Donegal going to be in those, you know, long-term proposals, the end of the 30 years?
Well, the short answer is no, I haven't seen the report yet, and I'm only literally going on what's been leaked out to the press by the various politicians and whoever else. I'm very pleased to hear that Letterkenny is in the mix, but until we actually see the report and we actually look at the timescales that they're talking about implementing it, then I'm not so certain it's time to get the champagne bottles out yet. We need to see what's in the detail.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no argument against this, is there?
No, none at all. If you look at the way that, if you look at the regional development strategy that's been set up for the whole Northwest, it absolutely ties in with that. If you look at the context of how we're promoting Letterkenny, Derry and Strabane as the Northwest City region, it all makes sense. As I say, the concern I've got, and I've said this pretty much every time I've been on the show, is what's the timescale? You know, I mean, one of the rabbits that was pulled out of the hat there this morning was the mention of Cavan and Monaghan. That would certainly be a big, big improvement. But they're not talking about even getting the railway line from Dunboyne to Navan until around about the 2040s. So what sort of timescale are we actually talking about? And I don't think we'll know that until we actually see the bones of the report itself.
In sort of making the argument for it, it seems that this report talks of, you know, multiple freight connections primarily, and then obviously there could be some sort of a use in terms of passengers and what have you. Is that the norm? Is there anything in that that jumps out at you?
well, not especially. We've already got the bare bones of the abandoned railway that currently runs between Athenry and Sligo. You know, the most important or most expensive part of building a railway is the procurement of the land on which to build it. So if you've already got a ready-made piece of land, I mean, look, take, for instance, down in Foynes. There hasn't been a train from Limerick to Foynes for freight purposes for the last 20-odd years. So it's actually a fairly quick win in that what they're doing now is that they're removing the old tracks and they're going to be putting down new tracks to replace that. So that's coming up in the next couple of years. And they certainly talk about, although it's initially for freight, they're talking about putting in a passenger service in time for the Ryder Cup in a couple of years' time down at Adair. So I think freight is the real driver in many respects of getting these railways reopened. If you think about the amount of lorries literally thundering through narrow village streets up and down the country, if you can get a sufficient quantity of freight to be moved by train, it makes absolute sense to do that. In the context of Donegal, I would say we would see the line to Letterkenny coming in line with the proposed reopening of the line from Portadown to Omagh and Strabane and on to Derry itself. But I would think it would make a lot of sense, especially in the context of North West City region, is that you'd actually have almost like a kind of a triangular link between Derry, Strabane and Letterkenny. So you'd effectively have a direct route from Derry to Letterkenny for sure. But if the line is actually coming up from Portadown, it makes a lot of sense to run it straight from Strabane into Letterkenny and still have the link to Derry as well, of course. So we'll have to see what comes out in the report. Obviously, bits are being opened. It's not even a drip feed at this stage. I mean, the tap is fully on. And, you know, the concern I've got is, and Eamon Ryan himself raised this actually yesterday at a press conference, is about the length of time taken from the point at which they say, yes, we're going to do this, to actually obtaining the necessary planning and permissions, dealing with objections, and actually getting spades in the ground. I mean,
but even financing this, I suspect that we could start seeing projects like this leveraged against road projects. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think it makes sense to do both. You know, we desperately need things like the A5 dual carriageway in place because of the amount of traffic that particular stretch of road, as we all know, takes coming up and down between Dublin and Donegal. But we need to approach infrastructure rather than as a reward for investment. It's actually as an enabler. And that is the key difference that we need to start thinking, because for too long we've seen infrastructure, well, if you get enough of a population, we might reward you with a railway line. No, you establish the railway line first, and then you use that as the foundation on which to build local investment and jobs and growth.
Yeah, and there are major developments like potentially, you know, the 10T, a major road development from Letterkenny to effectively Strabane that would link with the A5. I mean, if we were really serious about that, you would like to see, you know, is those plans modified perhaps to accommodate, you know, a rail line next to it. If I started seeing that sort of stuff, then I'd start saying, right, okay, you know, maybe they're serious about this, but if we allow that to progress through and then restart the planning process potentially for a Letterkenny-Strabane link, then I would start feeling that, you know, right, that was just waffle and we're not going to see it. That would make me feel like it's a real possibility.
I think you're absolutely right, Greg. If you get off the plane in Amsterdam and you take the train from Schiphol Airport into the city centre, the train line runs literally beside the motorway all the way in. And if you're going to be setting aside land, as I said before, the most expensive part of the construction of a railway is procurement of the land. You know, why not make provision? I mean, trains these days are able to cope with much better gradients than they would have done in the past. But you essentially engineer it. And I've argued this before with Donegal County Council manager and with the Derry City Council chief executive. And, you know, said if you're making provision for dual carriageways, make the provision for the railway, because you know it's coming at some point. Otherwise, you're just doubling your expenses. And they didn't laugh me out of it. So we'll have to see if that piece of what I consider common sense, and I suspect you do too as well, Greg, will actually come to fruition.
Richard, thanks as always for your time. We shall see. Okay, that is...
Absolutely.
Take care. Richard Logue, campaigner for better transport. Charles Bartley is PRO of West Ulster Rail Initiative. He joins us on the programme now. Charles, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
And I know your initiative, your organisation, has campaigned heavy in relation to this with a series of meetings and lobbying and what have you. I mean, obviously, this is now, we're just hearing the words Donegal and rail in the same sentence, but real positive mood music from your perspective?
Yes, it is. It's our first of our campaign has actually started this show. And what the politicians, there's a number of politicians behind us as well, has actually helped also.
What do you, I mean, you're working off the same information that's in the newspapers as we are, Charles, is that correct? Or do you know anything further about timelines? Because there seems to be, you know, a short-term, medium-term and long-term approach being adopted here.
Well, as you say, a lot of it was played to us in the last while, but in regards of the main report being released yesterday, we're looking for more of it tonight, but a lot of what has been said has been indicated to us in the last number of months.
And you say, and you've argued, Charles, for the long time, there's a lot of positives in this regard, obviously just in terms of access and all, but with an eye on the climate as well in terms of, you know, moving things around more efficiently.
That is correct. And also taking 70% of the freight off the roads and onto the trains.
Yes, okay, we've lost that connection to Charles, but we got his main point. It was a broad welcome to it. That was Charles Bartley, PRO of the West Ulster Rail Initiative. Do you think it might happen? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Couple of calls in from listeners warning their fellow listeners of Amazon hoax calls. They're doing the rounds at the moment, so you might get a call. Lots of people are ordering stuff all the time. So this is how you might get caught out, but they ring you up talking of a delivery, or it could be about your subscription. It varies from one to the other, saying there are issues, and there really are quite convincing calls, and sometimes they have quite good information about the person they're calling. So another listener warning others that the Amazon hoax calls are doing the rounds at the moment. A caller says in Austria, home insulation is made from sheep's wool. In Donegal, we have 13 of the national sheep flock. Our wool crop is now worthless. Its disposal is now a problem. We need a state initiative to do this in the way we set up the Sugar Co. and ESB almost 100 years ago. That comes in from Connell. Yes, indeed. I was chatting to a few people about that, and they were talking of the disposal of that wool. All right, stay right where you are. Back in a moment. Now, the High Court has dismissed the bail application of accused Vikat Bhagat in 2017, Irish national Danielle McLaughlin's rape and murder case. The High Court has also directed the trial court to expedite the trial and conclude it within 1 year. So if there's anyone that deserves some good news, it's Andrea Bannigan, who's the mother of Danielle McLaughlin, and we hope this is good news. Andrea, thanks for joining us this morning. And I suppose this comes down to, there's been many false dawns. This comes down to whether or not this is followed through on, I suppose.
Well, it's the first time the High Court has ever got involved in Danielle's trial. And so I'm very hopeful this time that it will hopefully be over within the year.
And hearing information like Bhagat has as many as six files, case files against him for different offences. The High Court also noted that the Vikat's conduct in the jail in the last 6.5 years has been very bad, and he assaulted inmates and jail staff too. Now I'm reading a translated version of it, but you know, we're learning more about this person, what his history is, what he's capable of. And I think the fact that's on the record of the High Court, and as you say, they're taking an interest in this case, hugely important.
I'm hopeful that it will be over, and I'm glad he got refused bail again yesterday, because there's always a worry in my head that he will get out.
Mm.
So hopefully now it will be concluded within the year, and Danielle will finally get some kind of justice.
And you too, this whilst dealing with this awful loss of your beautiful daughter.
I needed over for Danielle. I needed over for her. So, but then there's always the fear that he will kill it. But hopefully not.
You would hope with the language that was used in the High Court that it would be very hard to argue any delays in this trial now or any applications for bail. That's all you can hope for, Andrea, I suppose.
Well, he can't go any further now. It's been rejected by the High Court for bail, so that's finished with this time. So when the High Court gets involved, normally they do listen to them. But the trial's back on Friday, so it's more a waiting game now to see how Friday goes.
And
Do they be faster?
Yeah, and whilst they say, you know, it has to be finished within a year, it could move much quicker than that. I mean, do you allow yourself to hope that they will want to get this case over and done with as soon as possible now?
That sounds like they want it over and done with. I'll work for the year and then over that as a big bonus for us.
Yeah, indeed. In terms of your ability to follow the trial, Andrea, is there any improvement in that regard?
Well, I do get updates from the lawyers and also go on the court records. No, I'm not, like, they still have never given me access to view the courtroom.
Yeah.
Hopefully now, if the trial does get near the end, I will go over to Goa.
Are you prepared for that, Andrea, or would you look forward to that, or what are your emotions like?
No,
just in terms of, I mean, going over to see justice hopefully being served. That, you know, I don't mean look forward to it as in you might a holiday, but just in terms of being able to close this off, this element of it, you know, in person.
I feel I need to see it and also try and see the beauty that Danielle did see in Goa. And I would like to just put an end to that part of it.
Yeah, okay.
But it's something that I do know it will affect my emotions.
No, it'll be a really tough journey, that, for many, many different reasons. For the joy.
Because I'll have to go and view where she passed away as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, Andrea, as I say, no one deserves... I'll say positive news. You know what I mean by that, Andrea, that this would be over and done with.
You
know what I mean? No one deserves it more than you, because it's a torture what you've been going through. And we appreciate you speaking to us, and hopefully we'll speak again, and hopefully this gets resolved for all the reasons you want it to. I can't presume to know why, Andrea, but you know yourself what that journey would mean to you, what you would want from it. And I hope everything is as you wish. And I hope that it's not a year. I hope they are embarrassed into doing this really, really quickly.
I really hope you're right, because I do need it over. I need it concluded for us as a family.
Yeah. And you do get, Andrea, when we speak to you, you do get a sense that everyone is rooting for you, don't you, right across the region and beyond that. I hope you do know that everyone...
Oh, I do know that, because still receive letters from Dublin, etc.
Brilliant, okay.
And some other parts of Ireland.
All right, so as long as you know that we're all behind you. Okay, thanks, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. All right, take care. Andrea Bannigan there, mother of Danielle McLaughlin. We'll keep a close eye on that as we have right through that whole process. Greg, you'll be collecting your pension before there's a railway in Donegal. I think that's optimistic that I'd still be alive, to be honest with you. I try and stay positive. I think I'll be collecting a pension before the Twin Towns is bypassed or there's a bridge over the Swilly. Any of those major projects, I hope I'm wrong. I think I will be collecting a pension. Walking on the beautiful railway track behind Muckish to Burton Port, my thinking when walking on it is there should be trains on this track. After all the hard manual work that our ancestors did creating it in the first place, sadly the track was not preserved, as houses are built on much of the track from Letterkenny indeed. And there's other areas, and I think dependent where you are in the region, you'll know where the train track went previously. I was looking recently at old videos of the train pulling out of Creasla onto Burton Port, I believe it was, and the beautiful scenery that must have been on that train from Letterkenny to Creasla. And then I would love to see footage from the train going through Barnesmore Gap up on that elevated site. It just must have been something to behold, to be on it, but also to see it trundling along the edge of the mountain there. If there were ever to be a train, say, to Sligo, would it go along that route again? Probably not. But I just can imagine how beautiful it must have been. Eamon Ryan, Green Party extending a railway link to Donegal. Really? Is this the 1st of April? No, it's not. For some, it might feel like it, but it's not. He said it. So we'll see. As I say, it might be on the long finger. Caller says, climate change is real, of course. Basic geography tells us that the Earth goes through a climate cycle of ice age to tropical age since the dawn of time. This is how we've turf and coal. Recently, a number of green energy experts were questioned by US Congress, and none had any idea if the percentage of CO2 in our atmosphere, guessing from 6 to 9%, is in fact around 0.044%. The reality is that if it drops below 0.4%, global crops will begin to fail. So while I agree that we need cleaner energy and less plastics, etc., I believe it should be done for health and ecology reasons rather than climate alarmist reasons. Well, I think we're quite entitled to be alarmed to some extent because we're seeing very dramatic changes in a short period of time. You probably know better how the climate cycled through the ice age and tropical age and what have you. But did the temperature increase by 0.7 degrees over 30 years as was being predicted? These are facts that can't be ignored. That is a very rapid temperature increase over a short period of time. How long is Navan looking for a rail service? And there's already a line there. And can we see anything positive re-rail services under a line from Dublin to Galway? Pardon the pun. I don't know. Right, okay. Sorry, just bringing our next guest in shortly. In the Free State's latest podcast, Joe Brolly, an eminent criminal barrister, said that it was his opinion that there were criminal charges to be answered by the executive members in RTE. I just wonder, is there any active Garda inquiry? Have any of the politicians who've been so vocal on the issue made an official complaint? Or is this going to be another Irish scandal where everyone knows there was wrongdoing, criminality and activity, but because of who's involved, nobody's held accountable? Well, I suppose whether they made a formal complaint or not, I don't know. But it seems that RTE got their own advice that said there was no criminality, and many of the members of the Oireachtas Committee seemed to accept that. Good to see a lot of people not paying the TV licence. I won't be either when mine's up. Okay. Hi, Greg. It's a joke, the work they've started doing in Newtown Main Road. This work should have been done at night. They can't do anything in this country, Greg. They need to do some shaking up in this country. Thanks. And there was amazing nighttime works done from the mountaintop where we're sitting at the moment down that hill. What's it called? It's really effective. It must be really expensive. I don't know why certain roads are done at night and others aren't. Another caller says, RTE needs to concentrate on Irish talent, Irish news, Irish drama. Get rid of Aussie English soaps and UK stories. Get rid of Network 2 and 2FM, for instance. It concentrates on UK celeb culture. Ignored parental alienation. Okay. If you have a TV receiving apparatus, you're required to have a license, whether you watch RTE or not, under the Wireless Telegraphy Act, outdated or not. It's the law, or do we care less? Well, that's a very interesting question. Do we care or not? Right, okay. 59 families are to sue the HSC for damages after their loved ones contracted COVID-19 and died while in the care of state-run facilities and private nursing homes. Majella Beatty is founder of Care Champions and joins us on the programme now. Thank you so much for joining us, Majella.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's good to have you on the programme. So what is the liability here? What is the basis of this case?
Families, you know, over the past 3 years have not been getting answers as to what actually happened to their loved ones. And, you know, at this point, 59 families have taken a case because they feel they've been forced to do this. You know, they've gone to government, they've gone to the homes themselves, and they are not finding out what happened in the final days of their loved ones' deaths. And they feel there's no other route for them to go in order to get access to information.
And is it access to the truth as well? I mean, do we know what happened?
Exactly. We don't know who was there. Was anybody there? Did they receive any medical attention? You know, were they in pain? Did they know they were loved? You know, and, you know, the reality is our families, you know, many of them were given wrong information, were not told that their loved ones had COVID or were sick. You know, we've had incidents of people ringing a nursing home and being given the information about another family member. And then, of course, you know, as our group has developed, we've supported over 200 staff members. And, you know, they have really confirmed families' worst fears. And it was through them, I suppose, that gives us, I suppose, that little bit of push to keep going to get answers. And, you know, we've been highlighting, you know, there's no reform and there's no lessons. And we've been highlighting the need for urgent safeguarding laws to prevent something like this happening again. And we're seeing it right through care, you know, in all services, be it hospitals, residential services or nursing homes. We're seeing serious failures, no learnings and no action to prevent them happening again. And, you know, we talk about the nursing home deaths, but there was far more than the deaths. There was suffering, there was neglect, there was oftentimes abuse.
Can you give us, just to help us understand, the outlines of a case, you know, without going into specifics, you know, when in when during the pandemic might it have happened, and what was an individual's experience, if you know what I mean? If you have that off the top of your head, Magella, yeah, just so we can understand what has driven a person to sort, or a family to sort of take this action.
Okay, so maybe if I use two examples to show how there was no learning through the pandemic. So in wave one, in March 2020, the pandemic, the nursing homes closed down. Very early that Easter, there was an enormous outbreak in a nursing home near the north of Ireland. And in that nursing home, everything broke down. Everything went wrong. At the same time, there was a similar case in Dublin. The HSE was called in. It went to the highest levels of government and no action was taken quick enough. And over 20 people lost their lives in that nursing home and nothing was learned. So those people had a dreadful death. There was dehydration and horrific suffering. Families have had to fight since then to try and gather through FOIs and through PQs, trying to piece together what actually happened. And their findings have been atrocious. And then we'll just skip on. Now there's the hundreds of homes in between. We go to the third wave. So in the third wave in the south of Ireland, there was an outbreak where more than half of the residents of a nursing home died. In that nursing home, families were not told that there was COVID in the nursing home. It was all hearsay in the community. When it started to slip out that there was deaths in the nursing home, families were ringing in demanding answers. So one man, for example, was told his wife had walked up the corridor when in fact this lady hadn't walked for years. You know, it then transpired because a whistleblower had actually gone to the HSE, had gone to government saying, you need to help, we don't have the staff, you know, there isn't the experience here to try and save lives, and they were ignored. And they contacted the HSE on three occasions throughout that outbreak. There's X amount of people dead now, there's more dead, will you please try and come in here and help us to save lives? And nobody took action. It took 16 days for the regulator to go in after being informed of horrific crisis. Through the research, the families that ourselves have done, we have found through our own research, through not getting anything from the ministers or from HICWA or anybody else, we have found, in fact, that this particular nursing home, in fact, lied to the HSE, pretended that they had qualifications to manage the outbreak when, in fact, they didn't. And, in fact, they didn't report 9 deceased bodies for a number of days until it got out through the radar. And in the middle of that, we had families who, when their loved one died, didn't get their bodies back for a number of days. We still don't know where those bodies were. We don't know. Like at that point in nursing homes, oftentimes none of the staff that were in, because they were agency staff, all their own staff were out, did they even know who these people were? So we have families standing at graves wondering, is this my loved one that's in this grave?
And like on this program very early on, and regular listeners would know, the one issue that came up time and time again was nursing homes and what was going on in nursing homes. And really early on, around the time that you talked of, we were trying to get answers as to why people who were actually sick with COVID were being taken from acute hospitals and placed in these settings. It was happening live. This is not something that's new information that I'm going to fall off my seat hearing from you, Magella, because we were talking about it on this program. I'm sure others were at the time. Where is the logic? Where is the logic? We'd seen in Italy where the majority of deaths were and what was happening. So I'm not sure the defense of, well, we didn't know, it was a panic situation, we were doing our best. We knew what was going on. We knew what to come. And we in these communities knew that sick people were being, you know, COVID, it felt, was being seeded in these settings. And it was horrendous. And as I say, I've on the record a number of times on this program saying this is going to be the biggest scandal of all of this. What are we doing? Why did we do that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, it was nearly like people in nursing homes were older. I think there's a huge issue with ageism in this country anyway. But it was like they were trying to protect the hospital systems. But like, apart from those major mistakes that were made in wave one, which did bring COVID into nursing homes and ultimately had to cost an awful lot of lives, nothing was learned. We continue to make the same mistakes in wave two, wave three, wave four. In fact, this week I'm talking to a family that's standing outside a window of a nursing home. Like, where were the lessons? And, you know, we look at all of that, but we look at Ireland has never done well behind closed doors. And you had all the key organisations. You had the social workers, you had Age Action, you had us with lived experience sending submissions into governments, begging them to listen. You know, people are dying, people are not safe. People deserve their human rights upheld, and nobody listened, and still nobody is listening. And that's where we're at now. Like, we're at a point where we have tried to engage with the minister and the Taoiseach, and now we're going protesting again in September to try and get it, just to try and get the truth.
Yeah, but the defence will be that this was an emergency situation with an emergency response. So you're on about in terms of what was learned as we moved forward. You know, this is in the area of the care of people in these settings. When you think about it, there could be thousands of cases in very many areas of health whereby certain practices were continued with no logic whatsoever. The public knew what was going on. It didn't make any sense. Why were, you know, I don't want to go into specifics in case it sounds like I'm talking about specific cases, but I'm thinking in terms of, you know, maternity care, for an example, or you know what I mean? I know it's not quite the same, and I know we're talking about life and death in the cases that you're taking, but you do wonder where other cases may come from as well, Magella, in different areas of healthcare, really late into the pandemic, with inexplicable decisions being made or policies not changing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we started out with nursing homes, and then within our group, we have quite a lot of hospital cases where people would have went into hospital healthy and, you know, may have been left in a COVID. Like, my own mother was left 28 hours in a COVID area in a hospital until she picked up the virus, you know. And there was an awful lot of mistakes made. There was an awful lot of, and we're seeing the fruits of the policies that were put in place. You know, we've heard about the Emily case recently. We're seeing evidence of when families' eyes are not allowed in there, when we don't have protection within any care facility, when we don't have somebody we love there to advocate for us, things go wrong. And things can always go wrong everywhere. But within the area of health, we don't seem to want to learn. You know, we don't seem to want to bring out reports. We don't seem to want to highlight the truth so that we can learn.
But the government did the government not commit to holding an inquiry into this? And I seem to recall that it might have been Leo Varadkar that says, we will have a look into all of this. It won't be a headhunting exercise. It won't be about to attribute blame to individuals, but to sort of review what we did and how things could improve. Does that not go far enough then in waiting to find out what comes from that and what answers are discovered?
Yeah, it was the now tarnished Micheál Martin.
Okay, I beg your pardon.
He said we wouldn't have a headhunt. When Leo Varadkar then became Taoiseach again, he announced in January that we would have a full public inquiry. What we have been requesting is that families, as experts and residents who have survived, would be consulted in advance of the terms of reference, similar to what they've done in the UK. But we have not been engaged with, none of our families have been engaged with at all. We have requested consistently meetings so that we can be heard. Like, there is no point in doing a tokenistic inquiry. It has to be an inquiry that is human rights led. It has to be an inquiry that will see where the serious faults were. And more importantly, you know, ensure that this never happens again. You know, families can't move on. They're tortured by what happened maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And we cannot allow any other families to go through this.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning, Majella. I do appreciate it. Majella Beattie, founder of Care Champions. Right, okay, a caller says there are two railways in Donegal. Maybe connect them and start from there. Bonnesmall Railway. Wow, what a journey, even for tourists. Well, there was a whole string of Donegal Town, Ballyshannon to Donegal, wasn't it? Donegal Town to Killybegs. Donegal Town then through the gap, obviously, up to Ballybuffet. There's a whole network. Inishowen as well, too. And I think if you were in Inishowen, you wouldn't be holding out any hope of a rail line ever returning there because it doesn't seem to be part of the conversation. Climate change is great for surfers, tanners, but not for cancer, rare animals and plants in the future of the world, says the listener. Assume the railway report starts with once upon a time. Another expensive report that will gather dust. That comes in from Martin, who, by the sounds of things, Martin, and I'm only reading a very short message, it sounds like you're not optimistic they'll follow through on it. That's the feeling I'm getting. Hi, Greg. Sign up in Ards Forest Park. Dogs must be all kept on leads, but people are ignoring this, and it's really causing problems for us dog walkers with our dogs on leads. Then other dogs are running loose, chasing our dogs. Yeah, that's not good, is it? Here's one for you from a listener who messaged me yesterday, and thank you for that because now I remembered. Right, I have a query, please. Will you please ask your listeners if anyone successfully overcame a phobia such as a fear of dogs with the help of hypnosis or other? Okay, so that's a listener who is considering hypnosis to overcome a phobia of dogs, or maybe there are other phobias as well. It's an interesting question. Have any of you out there ever successfully gotten over your phobia through hypnosis or maybe acupuncture or something? I think they're looking for an alternative. Another listener says the only Twin Towns bypass we'll have for a long time is using the narrow bridge known locally as Barney Logue's Bridge, which is a nightmare at best indeed. It is one that I have frequented from a time to time. Not the type of road, in parts at least, that you want to meet traffic, and pulling out from that bridge too. If we're on about the same bridge, I'm sure we are. You do feel like you're risking it, which is not an emotion you want when you're driving, is it? Okay, that's the first hour of the 9 till noon show sorted. Thank you very much for listening, but don't go anywhere. We're going to take a break now for the news and the obituary notices, which I know many of you tuned in for and are waiting for, but stay with us thereafter because we've got another interesting and busy 2 hours for you. Back after these.